You're listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. Joining us today on the line, Mike Dobbs, managing editor of the Reminder Newspapers, and veteran Western Mass journalist Dave Eisenstatter. Mike, Dave, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
This week, the suspended head of the Holyoke, Massachusetts Soldiers Home denied covering up a deadly COVID-19 outbreak at the state-run facility. More than 70 veterans testing positive for the virus have died there. Bennett Walsh released documents showing that he let state officials know of the outbreak well before he was placed on administrative leave. William Bennett is Walsh's lawyer and uncle.
For anyone to suggest that he covered up, concealed, or tried to hide a public health crisis affecting the veterans he was committed to serve is a slander on his good name.
Mike, there are multiple investigations ongoing, but what's your reaction to this development?
Well, I'm sitting here at my front of my computer where I'm actually putting together a story for our newspapers about it. And I'm going through all of the information that William Bennett supplied. And it does paint a different picture. And the picture is a guy who actually told the people who need to be told about the incidence of COVID-19 at the Holyoke Soldiers Home, and did so on a timetable that would indicate that he was very responsive to what he was being told by the medical staff. So this is going to be very interesting how this shakes down in terms of what really happened there, and also in terms of how the state above Bennett Walsh actually reacted to the COVID-19 at the home.
Dave, unions representing workers at the Soldiers Home have criticized the way the crisis was handled internally. Still, if state officials knew about the outbreak, shouldn't they have provided more in the way of resources sooner?
I think so. It's a little bit difficult to know exactly what went on before the final report is released. There are other investigations going out. I'm not surprised that Bennett came out with this to get ahead of that report, which I think is coming out soon. Governor Baker has said that it's going to come out soon. There's a real hunger for some accountability during this COVID crisis. 76 lives were lost. It might be more than that. And somebody needs to be held accountable for that.
Also this week, protests over the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis police custody have spread to cities across the United States, including today in Springfield. And an online petition has started calling for Springfield police officers to be required to carry personal liability insurance. Supporters say this would make it easier to identify officers who use violence and would price them out of the job. Dave, should carrying this insurance be part of being a Springfield police officer?
I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't think that's going to be a catch-all solution, but I think that that is something that the department should absolutely look at. I think that Springfield police have a history of a problematic history of race relations, as can be said about police departments across the nation, and the horrific video that you can see of the Minneapolis arrests. It's outrageous. And I think that there should be top down, bottom up, every department in the country right now, every police department should be looking at its practices and really rooting out the institutional racism that seems to exist basically everywhere.
Mike, Dave mentioned it. Springfield officers have been caught up in several incidents in recent years, including some involving alleged brutality. Should what happened in Minneapolis cause local departments to look at their policies?
Well, of course, I think that what happened in Minneapolis should make everybody think not only about police policies, but overall race relations in this country. Because what happened in Minneapolis is unfortunately just another terrible, terrible chapter in this ongoing issue that we have. Speaking to this effort to about a liability insurance, I think that the big sticking point is going to be several points. Number one, how does that tie in with the police union and what the police union will and will not accept? And also, is there in other departments that require liability insurance, is this being used as a way of rooting out police officers who have a problem, who have demonstrated a high level of liability toward committing acts that could result not only in personal injury, but also in lawsuits against the city? So I think a lot of work would have to be done to move forward on this. It's not necessarily a bad idea by any means, but it's an idea that has to be grounded in the reality of, can this actually happen?
And I think it's one that should be done in tandem with several other things. I mean, I think that institutional racism in police departments is such a problem, and the lack of accountability. The mayor of Minneapolis has called this murder, as he calls it, a killing. It's a big problem, and it's a problem that keeps happening over and over again.
As states continue to reopen, the operators of the two tribal casinos in Connecticut say they'll be welcoming back customers soon over the objections of Governor Ned Lamont. And at one point this week, Governor Lamont threatened to pull the liquor licenses of both Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun, which the state does oversee, but the operators of the casinos, Dave, say they're sovereign nations and can open if they want to. Is this too soon for this?
A lot of the opening that's going on is probably happening too soon, but I don't think it's fair for the governor to be opening, you know, other parts of the economy and then saying, no, you sovereign nations aren't allowed to open your part. I think threatening to withhold liquor licenses, that's not the right way to go about it. I mean, these are sovereign nations, and they have their right to open. You know, whether I think personally they should open, I don't think so, and I'm not a fan of casinos in general. But just looking at the issue straight ahead, I mean, they have the right to do this, just as Governor Lamont has the right to open sectors of the Connecticut economy.
Mike, you wrote a little bit about this week, that you're not planning on going to Connecticut or Vermont or any other state that's maybe a little farther ahead in the opening process than Massachusetts is. Tell us a little bit about your feelings.
It's interesting that a few weeks ago, Governor Baker talked about how he was going to coordinate with other New England governors. So they have sort of this coordinated reopening plan. Because we're a relatively small region in the country, and there's a lot of people who go across state borders to shop or to visit friends, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, what has happened is the exact opposite. We've got various states with various levels of what they're going to do when. I think that the Native American casinos in Connecticut is a very good example of this, even though Governor Lamont didn't include this in his plan. It's a good example to indicate, okay, so you have casinos there, you have casinos in Rhode Island. How they're opening, how does that affect the Massachusetts casinos?
All right, one last piece of business. Mike Dobbs, happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. I am 66 today, which means I only have 4 more years till retirement.
Well, we want to keep you on the job, Mike, quite as long as we can. Mike Dobbs with a reminder, and veteran Western Mass journalist Dave Eisenstatter, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And thank you for listening to The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. You can also listen to us wherever you get your podcasts or by going to nepr.net/podcast hub. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.